A Descent into Egypt by Algernon Blackwood. Chapter 1. He was an accomplished, versatile man whom some called brilliant. Behind his talents lay a wealth of material that right selection could have lifted into genuine distinction. He did too many things, however, to excel in one, for a restless curiosity kept him ever on the move. George Isley was an able man. His short career in diplomacy proved it. Yet, when he abandoned this for travel and exploration, no one thought it a pity. He would do big things in any line. He was merely finding himself. Among the rolling stones of humanity, a few acquire moss of considerable value. They are not necessarily shiftless. They travel light. The comfortable pockets in the game of life that attract the majority are too small to retain them. They are in and out again in a moment. The world says, "What a pity, they stick to nothing." But the fact is that, like questing wild birds, they seek the nest they need. It is a question of values. They judge swiftly, change their line of flight, are gone, not even hearing the comment that they might have retired with a pension. And to this homeless questing type, George Isley certainly belonged. He was by no means shiftless. He merely sought with insatiable yearning that soft particular nest where he could settle down in permanently. And to an accompaniment of sighs and regrets from his friends, he found it. He found it, however, not in the present, but by retiring from the world without a pension, unclothed with honors and distinctions. He withdrew from the present and slipped softly back into a mighty past where he belonged. Why? How? Obeying what strange instincts? This remains unknown. Deep secret of an inner life that found no resting place in modern things. Such instincts are not disclosable in 20th century language, nor are the details of such a journey properly describable at all, except by the few, poets, prophets, psychiatrists, and the like. Such experiences are dismissed with the neat museum label, queer. So equally must the recorder of this experience share the honor of that little label, he who by chance witnessed certain external and visible signs of this inner and spiritual journey. There remains, nevertheless, the amazing reality of the experience, and to the recorder alone was some clue of interpretation possible, perhaps because in himself also lay the lure, though less imperative, of a similar journey. At any rate, the interpretation may be offered to the handful who realize that trains and motors are not the only means of travel left to our progressive race. In his younger days, I knew George Isley intimately. I know him now. But the George Isley I knew of old, the arresting personality with whom I traveled, climbed, explored, is no longer with us. He is not here. He disappeared, gradually, into the past. There is no George Isley. And that such an individuality could vanish while still his outer semblance walks the familiar streets, normal apparently, and not yet 50 in the number of his years, seems a tale, though difficult, well worth the telling. For I witnessed the slow submergence. It was very gradual. I cannot pretend to understand the entire significance of it. There was something questionable and sinister in the business that offered hints of astonishing possibilities. Were there a corps of spiritual police, the matter might be partially cleared up, but since none of the churches have yet organized anything effective of this sort, one can only fall back upon variants of the blessed Mesopotamia and whisper of derangement and the like. Such labels, of course, explain as little as most other clichés in life. That well-groomed, soldierly figure strolling down Piccadilly, watching the races, dining out. There is no derangement there. The face is not melancholy, the eye not wild. The gestures are quiet and the speech controlled. Yet the eye is empty, the face expressionless. Vacancy reigns there, provocative and significant, if not unduly noticeable. It is because the majority in life neither expect nor offer more. At closer quarters, you may think questioning things, or you may think nothing, probably the latter. You may wonder why something continually expected does not make its appearance, and you may watch for the evidence of personality the general presentment of the man has led you to expect. Disappointed, therefore, you may certainly be, but I defy you to discover the smallest hint of mental disorder. And of derangement or nervous affliction, absolutely nothing. Before long, perhaps you may feel you are talking.